Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome to the Kosafa Show with Mark Gleason and Nick Said.
We are joined for this special edition of the Kosafa Show by South African Football Association President Danny Yordane, who's been involved in the administration of the game for almost four decades and who was, of course, the power behind the throne in bringing the 2010 World Cup to the region.
Yordane excelled in soccer and cricket in his youth before heading into the boardroom and was also active in the fight against the evil of apartheid. But it is perhaps as an administrator that many football fans know him the best, as he also serves as the current third vice president of the Confederation of African Football.
Mr. Yordane, thank you so much for giving us your time. You held a SAFA National Executive Committee meeting this past weekend. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the key decisions made at that meeting?
Yes, I think that now that the Premier Soccer League has ended its season, we have in October, November, of course, international competition. And we had to deal with first the impact of COVID-19, and we had to seek clarity from the government in terms of its regulations, because the initial impression that was created was that international travel is now allowed and permitted. And so we thought that the teams will then fly into South Africa. But when you look at the regulations, it specifically says that international competition are prohibited. So that created a serious concern for the NEC, and we had to develop a response and went back to the minister to ask for clarity, because we have two matches scheduled, one against Zambia and one against Namibia, both in Rustenburg, that we are now not sure what the position is, and we need the clarity very urgently. And then we have the home and away match against Sao Tome in November. And that will have serious implications for us if teams are not allowed to come into South Africa to play international competition. Of course, our under-17 girls team is one match away from qualifying for the World Cup for the second consecutive time. And they must play Morocco home and away. So there is another concern, and our under-20 team similarly needs to play three more rounds of matches for qualification for the World Cup for the under-20 women. So that was a major issue. We had the doctor and the other compliance officers in the room to give a report. And then we had a presentation from the coach himself, Mr. Molefe Ntseki, and indicated to us their plans to go and monitor players who are playing overseas. He has keen interest in two or three of the players. And again, the question of international travel may be a factor in him bringing those players to bring them into the squad. This is over and above the players who play in Europe. These are new players who've never played for Bafana, but he was very keen on them. So we listened to his presentation. And then there was also the review of all of our committees, and we decided to bring former players and coaches back into our technical team. Coaches like Bobby Solomons, Lucas Khadebe, who was a former player. And then, of course, we had the others who already served there on the technical team. The other matter, of course, related to our search for a permanent chief executive officer, and we had received five candidates And they will go through a process of interview, and we hope by December we'll have a permanent CEO. So those are some of the matters that we went through. Of course, we looked at the impact of COVID-19 on our finances, and COVID had a positive and a negative impact on football's finance in the country. On the one hand, of course, the sponsors supports you as an activity. So if they give you the money, it must be against an activity. In other words, the national team must play. And if there's no activity, there's no revenue. So most of the sponsors took that position to say, we are not just giving you money, we are sponsoring an activity. And if you have no activity, why must we pay? Even if it is a condition and a contractual obligation. So that is on the one side. On the other hand, because we don't have any activity, the costs, operational costs, has been reduced tremendously. And that gave us also a chance to recover. And what we've then done is to focus on getting the money to the regions. And we paid 12 million rand in grants to our regions. We paid another 10 million rand to the clubs for them to get through COVID-19. We tried to get the money at grassroots level, and that was a major focus. And then we looked at our end of year financial statement, and it appeared that we'll have a positive result of some 63 million surplus. So all of those things were dealt with in the NEC meeting, which was a very productive meeting.
You mentioned there about having someone like Lucas Radebe come back and be involved on the technical committee. How important is it to have sort of former players involved in these discussions and in terms of moving the game forward in the country?
You know, we encourage former players, but also encourage them either to get education or get technical qualifications. And sometimes it's a problem. Particular players who play at the highest level. I remember the story of Ruud Gullit. Ruud Gullit, when he was at the end of his career and retired, and he went back to the Netherlands. I had this conversation with him, and he said, now, the KNVB is very clear that if you do not have qualifications, you cannot be a coach at any level at the KNVB. Now, he then told them, I'm looking at you in this room who was telling me I cannot coach the Dutch national team. And what are your qualifications? I was player of the year. I was this and this and this and this. And he said he was quite arrogant. But they stuck to their guns to say, no, if you don't have any qualifications, you're not allowed to coach here. Of course, then he left. He went to England and became the coach of Chelsea without qualifications. And they just look at the big brand, the profile. But, you know, that was short-lived. And he then went back and did his coaching badges. And now he's a qualified coach. So very often you find that players, and I had an example in South Africa too, where I had to speak to this legend player who also felt that he knows everything about football. Why must he now go and be told by people who have never played at the highest level how to coach? And I then agreed with him that he can do it orally. He said, you sit down there and you explain all the things you know, and the evaluators will sit there. They will then write it up, and then if you can prove yes, you know all the things that they want you to know at a particular level of the coaching badge, then we will give you. And we did that for many of our former players. So it's very difficult to come back specifically. Lucas, I asked him whether he's looking at the technical director, because some of the things that he says in the public, it appears that you want to be an administrator. And if he wants to be an administrator, he must then tell us so that we can get him out of the technical stream. But that's for him to decide.
Just moving back to COVID, SAFA was at the forefront of the return in South Africa, and so that the PSL season could be completed. And it's obviously something that the neighbors here in the CASAFA region are grappling with at the moment. Could you sort of just explain to us what the biggest challenge was in formulating the plan for a safe return for football, and what sort of advice could you give to other countries in the region who are now in a similar situation?
Well, you know, in South Africa, of course, you have the National Association, and then you have the professional league that effectively runs the league. And you may know in the beginning our interpretation of what that response should be was a different one. So the first thing that we had to do is to create a joint liaison working group to sit down and deal with the COVID-19 impact from a football point of view, but also we have to take into account the regulations of the government, because FIFA is very clear that the final word is with the government as to whether you can resumption of play or we should remain with a ban on play. And so it was a process that we engaged with all of our medical staff and also people from we deal with logistics. And finally, we had drawn up a resumption of play protocol, which effectively looked at the regulations and then agreed with the government how we should return. And basically, it was that all clubs should test all the players, that once the players are tested and they are negative, they can then proceed to go in a very specific and defined area that we call the bio bubble. In other words, it means that those players, if they go into the hotel, they may not leave. They cannot go home. They cannot have visitors. They must stay there from the beginning to the end of all matches. Of course, to the players, it was very frustrating. We then had to sanitize the matches, the stadiums where the matches were going to be played, as well as the training grounds, to sanitize the buses and keep social distance. And of course, we had compliance officers that would check that every team, every player complies with the requirements as how they should conduct themselves in this isolated environment or the bio bubble. And I think once we set out the detail of how it must be operated, and we had the people with daily reports and strict monitoring, we managed to get through, and all the matches were played. And the one thing that we were worried about, and that the government was worried about, is that there would be a major spike of infections as a result of resuming play and the players being together. And of course, it's a difficult situation because the players must be in single rooms. They must not walk up and down and then gather in one room. They should respect social distance, even if they're in that hotel. So it requires a lot of monitoring, because the natural thing for players is to gather in one or two rooms and have a conversation or party or just relax. So it requires strict monitoring. And I think we are happy with the outcome that the league was completed. And what an end to the league. I think we never had such an end in the history of football. And I think perhaps the lesson to the club is don't lead with 13 points before COVID.
Very true, sir. Just returning to the national team, Fran, you've obviously been involved at a national association level now, you know, since the 1990s. It's fair to say that in that time, perhaps Bafana Bafana have, you know, these days they haven't enjoyed the same success as they did in 96 and reaching the World Cup in 98. Why do you think that is? Has it become more competitive on the continental level?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when we started, you just had to beat one or two countries, and the others, they would play in the preliminary rounds, and then when they're out, that's the end of the international program. And one of the reasons that you have confederation or zones, as it's called, on the African continent, is to encourage greater competitiveness amongst the national teams on the continent, because you could count every year who is going to the World Cup. And so for South Africa too, if you look back at the teams then and look now, and I think the investment from FIFA had made a difference on the continent. The regular competitions within the zones like COSAFA. In COSAFA, I just looked at its record. Many of the tournaments used to be cancelled in the past. Now COSAFA has a tournament for every age group, both men and women. And that is the case in most of the zones. So certainly there's been a lot of investment in African football. And there are no easy teams on the continent anymore. So that on the one hand. On the other hand, our teams, as not our club teams, that is, they have not focused on what the North Africans focus on. Regard the Champions League competition as the most important competition for them. Teams like Ahli, Zamalek, these teams take it very, very seriously. Our teams very often regard it as a nuisance, a disruption of their league program. And so they participate half-heartedly. I think the fact that Mamelodi Sundowns has made a commitment and has achieved success has now triggered a different attitude from our clubs. And if you look at when we won the African Cup of Nations in 96, Pirates won the Champions League in 95, and we went to the World Cup with that team. But it's battle-hardened players in a Champions League that helped national teams. And unfortunately, we did not have that for a long period of time. We want to have it again. And if you look at the other teams, look at the emergence of Uganda, for example. Kenya has done very well, and they are emerging. So we want our teams to put greater focus and greater effort in the CAF Champions League.
While you're disappointed, obviously, then with the men, you must be delighted with the ladies, with the women, with Banyana going to the World Cup in France, for example. And also, South Africa seems to now getting a steady stream of junior sides into the age group World Cups.
Yes, absolutely. And that is part of the focus. You see, we said that one of the problems that we have is that you cannot have a Bafana team compete on the continent when the two mainstream flow of talent in that team is one, battle-hardened players from the CAF Champions League, and two, players who come into Bafana team with 50, 60 caps internationally. In other words, it means that your under 17 must get to AFCON and to the World Cup. Your under 20 must get there. The under 23 must get there to the Olympics. Now, if you look at what happened since 2015, we had under 17 in the World Cup. We had the women under 17 in the World Cup. The under 20 team went to two consecutive under 20 World Cups, 2017, 2019. The under 23 went to two consecutive Olympics, 2016 in Rio and 2020 in Tokyo. And Banyana, of course, has won the COSAFA Cup 6 times in a row and has been in the final of the African Cup of Nations, lost by a penalty shootout to Nigeria and qualified for the World Cup. We have 26 women players playing overseas. So we have, I think, done very well. Of course, now the under-17 women team is just one match away, home and away, against Morocco to qualify for the World Cup in India. And the under-20 team women, 3 matches away for the under-20 Women's World Cup in Panama. And of course, the under-23, depending on when Tokyo will happen, they've qualified for Tokyo. So there we have, for Bafana and Banyana, a pool of very strong, experienced international players. And I hope that soon we'll see a Bafana that can compete again. Of course, in 2019 in Egypt, we went to the quarterfinal, and it was a huge moment that night when we managed to beat an Egyptian team with the king, Mo Salah, in that team in Cairo International Stadium. And I was sitting in the VIP box, and at the end of that match, the army generals and officials and ministers was in a room, and as again, talking on top of their voices. Good thing for them, I don't understand Arabic, but I could clearly see there's problems here. And by the time I got to the hotel, I saw on the news that the government had decided to remove the entire leadership of Egyptian football, including coaches, everybody. They just removed everybody. So it was a huge disappointment for them. But it was a glorious moment for South Africa. Of course, Mark Fish was on the bench, and he also retired because he almost had a fight with the Egyptian bench. And yes, then he came to me, he says, "No, please, you know, give me something else, because I've discovered tonight I cannot sit on that bench, because the abuse that they are shouting and the things that they are saying, I felt like I must go there and just have a fight now, must fight it out. So I'm sorry, it's not a job for me. I'm going to be banned." So Mark Fish also resigned on that night. Doesn't want to be close to the bench. It was a very, very emotional and very tense match, but a huge success. But, you know, these things, great teams, good teams win now and then. Great teams win every time. And that is what we want. We have 65 young players in Europe now. And many of them, I think, that is what we asked Malia Finseki. They are 22, 24. He must go and have a look at those players and build a Bafana team, because I think our team is in transition. Many of those who are in the starting lineup, 33, 32, 34, and he must begin to think how he can build a team that can qualify for the World Cup, qualify for African Cup of Nations, and still manage to build a team. Fortunately, we have many good players in the under-23 Olympic team.
You know, COSAFA is hoping to have a bumper year next year with as many as 10 tournaments, including a first ever under-15 competition. South Africa has often played a crucial role as a host for COSAFA events. Why are these so important to SAFA?
Well, you see, the route to both CAF, AFCON, and to FIFA competitions, that route goes through Africa. Now, CAF has decided that in order to qualify for both the World Cup and to qualify for CAF's African Cup of Nations, except, of course, a senior, all other teams, junior teams, you must qualify through your zone. So effectively, it means that we, as COSAFA countries, we have to battle it out to qualify for AFCON by playing in COSAFA. And that, I think, has changed this laissez-faire approach of COSAFA countries to COSAFA competitions. So COSAFA competitions have become very, very important. And what you can also see is that the COSAFA countries are doing better in CAF competitions because of the improvement in the quality and the standard of COSAFA competitions.
The last question we wanted to ask you was just looking ahead now. I mean, we've had a year of famine. We will have a year of feast, hopefully, in 2021 with lots of qualifiers, World Cup, Cup of Nations, all the bananas and junior competitions you've mentioned. Give us a sense of your immediate ambitions as far as Bafana are concerned and as far as the other South African national teams are concerned.
Well, I think for Bafana, the coach must do two things. He must begin to integrate the players from under 23. We have players who are doing very well. But at the same time, he should qualify for AFCON. There cannot be a question about that. I think we have a good chance for the World Cup as well. And we have quality players. So it's how he's going to manage the process. For the women team, Banyana, of course, Bafana is ranked number 13 on the continent. Banyana is number 3 on the continent. And so the good thing of the women is that the FIFA has increased the number of teams in the Women's World Cup to 32 teams. And I would assume that we will have a minimum of 5 teams in the World Cup. The allocation of places in the World Cup is not something that I agree with. You know, I cannot find any reason why Africa should not get a better and equal allocation. From the junior level up, how can we have 1 and 2 teams in the World Cup for juniors? And then when you come to the seniors, you have now in 2026 a 48-nation World Cup, and then we have 10. Development means that you have a broader base and a peak. Now, here you have an inverse of a triangle where you have a small entry of junior African teams and a wide base on top of 10 teams. So this is something that we have debated with people in FIFA. In fact, I've written a letter or a paper that I sent to them on my own views on these issues. And our junior teams, therefore, we want them to qualify. And our senior teams, certainly Banyana should. With our 26 players playing in Europe, the National League for Women's Football in the country is going into its second season. There should be a strong base for a very competitive Banyana on the continent. The Champions League for women, of course, will help give our coach another platform to go and look at the participation and the competitions that she can use to build a Banyana team that can compete with the best on the continent and in the world. So 2021, I think, is going to be quite a year because most of the competitions of 2020 has been already moved across to 2021. And we start the year 2021 with an election in CAF. Then we deal with a lot of competitions in 2021, including the Olympics. And so there's a lot of work. I don't know whether 2021 has enough days There are only 52 weeks for football, and we have to play CHAN, we have to play qualifiers, we have to play World Cup, we have to play Club World Cup, all of these things in 52 weeks, where we actually, in 52 weeks, you have about 42 weeks for football. So it's going to be very tough next year, and I think that we need to make sure that the players are fit and ready for a very demanding season next year.
That's a wrap from us this week. We hope you enjoyed this special edition of the CASAFA show, and we look forward to your company in 2 weeks' time.
In the meantime, you can listen to more of our podcasts on Sokola Duma Radio, CASAFA.tv, Spotify, and iTunes. And you get all the latest news via our website at www.casafa.com and on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok.
Goodbye from us.